You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hi, this is David Cohn. The Michael K. Show starts now. Don't screw it up, boys.
Thank you, David, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Tuesday, June 1st, 2021. Yes, it's June already. Hope you're all doing well. Michael Kay, Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg, we're apart, but we're together for the next 4.5 hours. The other 19 and a half are your responsibility. So much to talk about that went on during the Memorial Day weekend. The Knicks kind of getting embarrassed in Atlanta. The Nets losing one game, then coming back and embarrassing the Celtics, and then a bottle-throwing incident and stepping on a leprechaun's head. The Mets, against all odds, continue to win, and the Yankees continue to lose, getting swept in Detroit. So there's a lot of stuff to cover today, so stick with us for 4.5 hours, and we'll try to cover all of it. But we'll start with the playoff report, the NBA playoff report, brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Now, the Nets play tonight, so they could close it out tonight. But we're going to start with the Knicks, Don and Peter, because the Knicks won game two. And if you remember, I came on the air and I said, I'm not that excited about that win because there were things that didn't happen that could have happened, that should have happened if they had long-term aspirations to win this series. And people kind of ripped me for it. I didn't think things would get this bad, but the Knicks have lost the ability to shoot from 3 points. Although Julius Randle had a decent game four, he's not the player that he was during the regular season. R.J. Barrett had a decent game four, but Burks was shut down. Bullock was shut down. And I think it comes down to this, and nobody wants to hear it. Knicks fans don't want to hear it. Nobody wants to hear it. The Hawks are better. So 13 times in Knicks history, they've gone down 3-1. They've never come back. Only 13 times out of 160 times in NBA history has a team gone down 3-1 and come back. And those 13 teams all were really good teams. And the Knicks are okay. They just outperformed everybody else during the regular season by working harder, yeah, better game plans, not quitting, playing every day, no load management. And as Don mentioned over and over and over again over the last week or so, that's out the window. That's out the window in the playoffs because everybody plays hard. Nobody takes days off. Everybody has time to game plan. Bottom line, and I hope the Knicks can come back. I don't think that they will. They're not as good as the Hawks, so we shouldn't be shocked. We should be surprised that they put up this little of a fight, Don, but they're not that good.
No, I think we went into this series believing that they could win, and we based it on regular season performance. And then I started thinking about what Greeny said last week about were they just a byproduct of outworking every team in the regular season because they needed every game, because they knew if they took on any of the top three teams, they'd have no shot, and their best shot was to take on Atlanta. And that's starting to look to be true. Now, I didn't have an intimate knowledge of Atlanta. Atlanta, to me, were a lot like the Knicks, you know, a team that didn't have a great history. Now they come out of nowhere to make the playoffs, and I thought they were kind of on even footing. And what you're seeing now is a team that's just – they're just not good enough. I mean, they're not ready is probably the better way to put it because this is still a build. They're still heading towards something here. But I think we accelerated the process based on the matchup and based how they played down the stretch of the season. But now looking at it, they're just not as good as the Hawks. It has nothing to do with the crowd, Peter. It has nothing to do with them being overwhelmed by the moment. It's just that right now in their stage of their rebuild, they're not ready for this moment.
It's the most boring headline ever from the weekend. And it, to me, it's the most true. The Hawks are, in fact, the rightful 4 seed. And the Knicks are the 5 seed. That's what it should be. The Knicks are the 5th best team. They're not good enough to beat the Hawks, who in fact should have been the 4 seed. They are the better team. I mean, listen, if you look at The last game's a great example because through Friday, the only way to look at this was kind of through the lens of Randle being just such a disappointment. And don't get me wrong, that conversation's still to be had. But guys, Randle and RJ weren't that bad yesterday.
No.
And they still got destroyed. At the same time, every game. Doesn't it always seem the Knicks are fine until early in the third? And then the wheels completely come off?
Well, I'm going to disagree with you on one thing.
Okay.
The Knicks aren't as good as the Celtics, and they're not as good as Miami. The Knicks play during the regular season where they had the foot on the accelerator for all 72 games, and those teams suffered a lot of injuries while the Knicks were generally healthy. The Knicks are not as good as Miami, and they're not as good as the Celtics, and the Celtics are getting their backsides handed to them by the Nets. So the Knicks, just from sheer will, won 41 games out of 72, and they should be applauded for it. But any Knicks fan that was calling in toward the end of the year, let this build slowly. Let it build with these guys. These guys aren't good enough to take the next step. They're just not. This is a total redo. You've got little pieces that you can build off of. You know, Quickley's going to be here. Toppin has really emerged in this series as somebody that maybe, you know, could be an important part of a really good team. But now, opening the door wide. I mean, Knicks fans don't want to hear this. You might have to deal a Randle or a Barrett in order to take the next step to get the great player. There's no great player on the Knicks. Randall's not even a number two player on a great team. He's a number three player on a great team.
Well, I hate you for saying this, but damn it. But Don, as much as I hate Michael for saying it, Randle opened the door for this with his play over the first four games of the series. It's hard to...
Yeah.
How could a Knicks fan say he's absolutely unmovable as of this second? Hey. Now, if he proves us wrong and they come back and win 4-3, okay. But right now, Don, he kind of left the door open for people like Michael to feel that way.
Well, going into the playoffs, we said, you listen, if you win easy or win the series, there's one way to continue to move forward. But if you get swept or look bad in the series, then you got to go another. So Michael's not wrong. I'd like another year to percolate a little bit, right? I mean, I think that – I don't know if you're not blowing it up. I mean, I think we all knew they were going to need to add another piece. But, you know, can this, as presently constituted, could they get better next year and take the next step? Maybe not to a championship, but can they be better than their first-round opponent next year? Can they be the fourth-best, third-best team in this conference if given some time to grow? Or is it, no, listen, not good enough. We're just going to have to figure this thing out.
No, I think that one thing that we have to look at is I think the Knicks are in good hands. Because when the trade deadline came around, you know what the Knicks did? Nothing. Nothing. And Thibodeau wanted them to add something. But the front office said, we're not good enough. We're not going to waste money that we could spend during the offseason. They're going to have $50 to $60 million in cap space to spend. They're going to have all that draft capital. They just sat back and let it breathe. And that was the smart thing to do. Now, maybe if they add a player, a good scorer, maybe they could put up a better fight against Atlanta. But they were smart. So Leon Rose and company, they're smart. They see what other fans don't see because fans get caught up in emotion. They looked at this team and said, they're getting by on sheer will. And that doesn't work in the playoffs. Sheer will doesn't work in the playoffs because everybody has sheer will and nobody's resting and nobody is phoning it in. And also, I think it's patently unfair to judge Julius Randle on this series. But I was saying this during the season. He's not a one or a two option on a great team. He's a really good player. He's not a great player. And he could be a number three on a great team. So there's still a lot of heavy lifting for the Knicks to do. And what this series did was open our eyes to that. Because they could have given us false hope. They could have rolled over an Atlanta team. And if they did, then maybe they were better than we thought. If they had rolled over this team, then all of a sudden Knicks fans would have said, you know what, Julius Randle, that's the number one guy. All we need is a number two guy. No, no, no. You need a one and a two and Julius Randle. But unfortunately for Julius, in order to get a one and a two, you might have to trade Julius because you're going to have to pick up somebody that's making a lot of money and you're going to make salaries work by dealing Julius' salary. That's what's going to end up happening. And if Julius thought he was going to get a big extension, well, the way he's played in this Atlanta series, what's going to happen, the Knicks will pick up that third year at $20 million, and they'll let it breathe, and they'll say, well, do it again next year, or they might deal him. So this is not the Knicks team that you're going to be rooting for the next 5 years. This was a great little appetizer. But none of the appetizer food is going to be the main course. I don't think hardly any of it. Maybe some garnish, but not a lot.
But what you need to really evaluate, Michael, and you've been very poignant with this too, because, again, I'm not being critical, but I do think a lot of the people that cover the Knicks around the team, it was such a feel-good story. People didn't want to pick too much apart because it was all just about this amazing run. Vegas had them winning 22 games, so there really wasn't anything to pick apart. But now you have to. Because there's going to be a carcass at the end of this, and you've got to figure out what you're going to keep and what you're going to throw away. You just have to. It's not a feel-good story anymore. Because now next year it's going to be, all right, let's take the next step. So what do you plan on doing? And that's where you really have to have an honest evaluation of what Julius Randle is. What exactly is he? And then once you know that, then you can build around that. If you believe he's a number two, different story. If he's a three, Michael, there's a lot more work to be done because that's two players you got to go out and get.
If he's a three, you might have to use one guy. If he's a three, you might have to use him to get the one and the two. The best case scenario is if they think he's a two.
So the feel-good story comes to an end. When the clock zeroes out on one of these next three games of the series is over, they really have to have a true come-to-Jesus moment on what exactly he is. Because there was nothing to pick apart during the regular season. It was all positive. But now you need somebody honestly to evaluate. What is he? Flash in the pan? A three or a four? Or is he somebody that's blossoming into could really be a Robin, and now you got to just go out and get the Batman? Easier said than done, but a heck of a lot easier than finding the Batman and Robin. That's almost like starting over. So that's what you need, a neutral person. Forget the feel-good story. Forget about the borderline MVP. What is Julius Randle?
Now, the other series that could end tonight in Barclays Center, the Nets and the Celtics. Nets are 3-1. Celtics gave everybody a little hope that this could be a fun series when they won game three. After starting off horribly, Peter ended that game within 3 minutes of the opening tip.
You saw that?
Oh, yeah. Everybody saw it. Peter couldn't be more wrong on the series, by the way. Don, if you remember, I'll make believe Peter's not listening. Peter also said that the Celtic fans were going to take the high road and not boo Kyrie. Yeah, they took the high road.
I thought it was a moment, and you know what? He found something positive in his heart, and he was fooled. And again, it's not going to be the first or last time that people in general let Peter down.
Right.
Can I just say one thing?
Sure, please. Say a lot.
While I was wrong at the beginning of the game when I thought it was over 3 minutes in, you guys do recall that earlier that day on the show, I said, even if the Celtics muster up the strength and steal this one, we're then going to get blown out 4-1. I said that was the one they could steal, but it would still be fool's gold, which it was. And it took 50 from Tatum, and then you saw where we landed in the next game. As for the Boston fans, you know, the truth is, certainly, you're right, Michael. They absolutely booed. It all felt fun and within the spirit of sports had that one moron not thrown the bottle. If that doesn't happen...
No, it wasn't in the spirit of sports. Because, I mean, if we were going to rip Knicks fans for saying F Trae Young, they were screaming F Kyrie Irving, too.
I did not hear such a thing.
Yeah, they were doing it throughout.
I was told that they
did it last year when he didn't even play. They were saying F. Kyrie Irving. And at Fenway Park over the weekend, they did F. Kyrie Irving.
Well, which day?
I'm not sure which day, but they did it.
Because after he decided to step, after he decided to wipe his foot on the logo, that might have done that.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought that up. Okay, that seems to be a narrative, but okay, so that means that somebody should throw a bottle at him?
See, why'd you do that, though? No, those are two separate things.
I'm not saying that you're saying it, but a lot of people are saying it. Well, because people that cover the NBA.
That's the problem with every conversation nowadays. Both could be true, right? He could be wrong for stepping on the logo, But whenever you bring that up, it's, well, so then that means the guy could throw the... No, the guy can't throw the bottle under any circumstances. The guy's an idiot and should be arrested and be in jail. Forget about banning him from any future events at TD Garden. He should just be out, done. But you could also complain that he didn't handle himself well. But apparently you can't do that. Because if you criticize Kyrie, well, then it's you're supporting the Boston fans. No, I believe in the nuance of being able to criticize both. I don't think one necessarily was right to lead to the other, but I do think he was wrong to do that.
I laid out completely on social media over the weekend because I knew if I were to even try to explain that I thought Kyrie went entirely too far with the wiping his foot on the logo. That franchise did not do anything to him. Like, him acting like the victim of the Celtics is a ridiculous narrative. The problem is, because you have one idiot fan in Boston who behaved this way, now if you point out that Kyrie really didn't need to do that and it was obnoxious, I'm now siding with the lunatic who threw a bottle? No way! Get that guy, I'm with Don 100%, get that guy out of here, but stop. Kyrie acting like he has somehow been done wrong by the Celtics is a completely BS narrative from him. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, Kyrie makes it hard to root for him. You know, he stands on a soapbox, and a lot of times some of the things don't make a lot of sense. And, you know, I thought he had the perfect answer for what happened in Game 3, where it looked like he was unnerved by the crowd, which is smaller than a sellout crowd. He completely stuck it to them, and you realize why you put up with all of the other stuff with Kyrie, because he's an extraordinary basketball player, and he really stuck it to the Celtics. But he had to add that little thing by stepping on the head of Larry the Leprechaun, and people are up in arms. Well, let's get one thing straight. It's a fictional character. It's a painting on a floor. It was stupid for him to do. It was not highbrow. But he did it, and people have a right to be upset. They don't have a right to throw any bottle.
No,
but I love Kevin Garnett ripping Kyrie Irving. Kevin Garnett, who said to Tim Duncan when he went up to get a free throw, he said, "Happy Mother's Day to Tim Duncan." And Tim Duncan's mother died when he was 14 years old. He's the guy who said to, who's the player? Villanueva.
Yeah.
He called him a cancer patient because it looks like he's going through chemotherapy. He's the guy who said that vile thing to Carmelo Anthony about his wife. Come on. Kevin Garnett should be the last guy that should be preaching about what a player should or shouldn't do or stepping over the line. He was a major stepper throughout his career. He did things that if he did it on the street, he'd get punched out, but he couldn't get punched out on a court because somebody didn't want to be suspended. Tim Duncan hates him to this day for saying that. Hates his guts. Imagine saying Happy Mother's Day to a guy who lost his mother when he was 14 years old, and Garnett knew exactly what he was doing. He's trying to antagonize people. So that's exactly what Kyrie did, and you're going to criticize Kyrie?
Well,
step back, okay? Back off a little bit.
Well, yeah, no, I agree. Not the right messenger, but he is the dude who won a championship with that team, so it's not surprising to see him get defensive of it. And I think a lot of people in the sports world felt weird about what to do, because the story is now so convoluted. You have Kyrie who comes out and says the stuff about race in Boston, which everyone knows is a real life issue that so many black athletes have talked about, right? So you take that seriously. By the way, I don't know if you guys saw Jaylen Brown's comments on Friday night. I thought they were absolutely awesome, or on Friday afternoon. But you have that. Then, in theory, the whole thing seems to go off without any sort of incident in that regard. But it's almost as if Kyrie wasn't going to be happy until something terrible happened in Boston. Now, in no way does he deserve to get a bottle thrown at him. That dude has already been charged. I hope he goes to jail. Disgusting. But at the same time, why, after all the serious conversation that Kyrie tried to have, you tried to have a serious conversation about race, which is worthy of conversation when talking about Boston sports, why were you then the guy who then absolutely had to do that at the end of the game? Doesn't it just seem like talking out of both sides of your mouth? Isn't this bigger than sports? Wasn't that issue more important than stepping on Lucky the Leprechaun?
I don't think he can control himself. I think he likes to be in the center of the storm.
And then that moron has to throw the bottle and totally make anyone else in Boston who did the right thing and was a good fan look terrible because it was such an embarrassing disgrace.
Now let's just talk about the game aspect. And Draymond Green said this today. Nobody is beating the Nets in the East. Now, I think the Milwaukee Bucks, they might be the best chance, because if Embiid is actually hurt with his knee, then I don't think Philadelphia has a chance because they don't have anybody to team up with Ben Simmons. Tobias Harris is really not a legitimate two, but the Milwaukee Bucks showed that they're playing top-level basketball when they swept the Miami Heat. But the three of them together, They did everything right in game four and showed how unstoppable they could be, and also showed pipe down on the defense. We'll just outscore everybody. Because right. They didn't play great defense against the Celtics in game four. Not at all. The Celtics were without Williams. They were without Kemba Walker. And they still scored, what, 120-something points. So the defense wasn't great, but the three of them are great. They can't be stopped. 18 assists for Harden. You saw what KD and Kyrie did. They're unstoppable. If they're healthy, they're unstoppable. And they're fun to watch. They really are. But the Larry the Leprechaun thing, I could have done without.
Lucky the Leprechaun.
I think it's – is it Lucky?
Hey, Larry was a player, a famed player on the team.
Oh, so it wasn't Lucky Bird.
Yeah, you had it backwards. It's Lucky. It's Lucky the Leprechaun, Larry Bird. That's right.
I'm sorry. See, that's what messed me up.
There's a
Thank
bird
you.
Now loose. There's a bird loose in the mall.
Well, that is the NBA playoff report brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Try Truly Hard Seltzer. 100 calories, 1 gram of sugar, 5% alcohol, and 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Beverage Company. Please drink responsibly. All right, we have a lot of stuff to do today. We have a lot of stuff to cover today. We have a lot of stuff to digest today. We have a lot of stuff to break down today. I don't even know if we could do it.
Digest and break down?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Into a fine powder, which is easier to digest.
I have a Daily Don as well.
Oh, yeah.
How was your weekend, Peter? Any trouble?
Trouble? No. Had a nice weekend with the fam. Relaxed. The weather stunk.
Did your parents get what I sent them over the weekend?
You sent them a gift?
Yeah, I did.
What'd you send?
I sent Mindy and Michael a pair of noise-canceling headphones, just in case.
I knew. I shouldn't have asked.
So I didn't get it.
If you knew how uncomfortable the bed situation was in my parents' house, you wouldn't even make this joke.
It's exactly what I wanted it to be.
Yeah, don't you worry.
It was uncomfortable, wasn't it?
Yeah, physically. Like, the beds are uncomfortable.
Oh, I was so happy.
Either
that
Michael's
I did that.
Banking on this relationship going nowhere, Peter, or he just knows for a fact he'll have a Yankee game the day of the wedding.
Right, because this level of disrespect is just
it's going to be very, very awkward.
I mean, the other day, what he was talking about, my mom was watching. My mom and girlfriend were watching the show together.
What sex? Think?
As Michael's making jokes about, oh my god. Fortunately, my mom is used to your shenanigans, so no harm, no foul.
Yeah, she likes Ballard and does like me, so now I'm doubling down on Mr. Bad Guy. Wow. My goodness. I just got word from our pinhead PD, Ryan Hurley.
Yeah.
We're going to have tickets to give away for Knicks Game 5.
Wow.
How about that? Now, the Garden will be a rockin' in Game 5.
I hope so.
What do you mean you hope so? Of course it will be.
I'll tell you what, too, whether they win the series or not, how they show up in Game 5 does certainly tell something, though.
Listen to Clint Capella of the Hawks and what he thinks about what's going to happen moving forward.
Push our guys around and talk shit, but we can do that, too. And we show them as soon as they came back here that we can push guys around, too. We can talk shit as well, so what you gonna do about it? And we can get a win with it, so what you gonna do about it? Oh, game four, you're coming back again. Well, it's gonna happen again. We win the game, we talk shit, and we push around. So what are you gonna do about it? So that's what happened. We can do it too. We can be physical, but we can win games as well. And now we're coming to your home to win this game again. They send you on vacation.
Damn.
You know what that is? Clint Capella and the Hawks have punked the Knicks. They've punked them. That was doubling down on punking them. They didn't talk this tough after they lost game two, did they? But they go to Atlanta, wins game three and four, and now they're talking about we're going to come to your home and do it again. Mm. Amazing. That's got to hurt. You know, that's not something you could hang on the bulletin board, but they should play that in the Knick locker room. Play that over and over on a loop so they could come out frothing when the game starts. Frothing.
They should froth.
The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. Nope. Also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Peter, I'm sorry for any uncomfortable feelings that I made at the Rosenberg household over the weekend.
It's too late. Sorry doesn't fix the limp.
Well, then I'm not sorry. Did you swim in the pool at all over the weekend, Don?
No.
How about yesterday? It was beautiful.
It was like 70.
Seven. Oh, okay. You have a heated pool.
I love how people, you know, it's a heated pool, but you got to get out.
Well, I mean, you got a robe there, don't you? Or
yeah,
a
hold on. No, yeah, Don, this is not a very Don-like take. I'm surprised that you think yesterday you couldn't have jumped in.
No. Impossible.
Impossible?
Yeah. Plus, it takes a while to heat up the pool.
Well, you could have started all weekend.
I love to swim.
We're taking water out of the pool. It was much rain.
How do you
take
water
out of the pool? Enjoy it, but otherwise, really, just Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, God should be ashamed of himself.
Well, my parents were saying the other day, that's their entire history. They said every Memorial Day in New York is like that for them.
Really? I think that's a bit hyperbolic.
Maybe a bit, Captain Literal Man, but yes, that rainy Memorial Day. July 4th is the good weekend here. Memorial Day is garbage.
Rain's one thing. 48? Come on.
Yeah, that's a disgrace.
1-800-919-3776. Let's get to it. A lot of stuff to do, a lot of stuff to talk about. It's Kayla Greco-Rosenberg and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
My love. Let's take some phone calls today. 1-800-919-3776. Let's go to Manny in White Plains to start it off. Manny.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Well, you had a good weekend.
Yes.
Good. So I just wanted to touch on, Michael, you hit it right on the head. The Knicks are in a perfect position. This is the best thing that could ever happen to them. And the reason why I say that is because the Toronto Raptors, they did the same thing. They had a team ready to go, ready to win, and they got that big free agent. Same thing with the Nets. They had a team ready to go. They made some moves. They got their free agent that they needed. And they were ready to go. And the Knicks are in a perfect position to do the same exact thing. And that's just from hard work. They got to get a couple more pieces. And like you said, the talent is just not there. But the fundamentals, the ground floor, and the foundation of the actual franchise is built and ready to go. And I just wanted to basically say, you know, Michael, you hit it right on the head.
Well, I think you put it very well. The foundation's there. Now that they build the house around it, the foundation is there. It's a solid foundation. You have a great head coach. You've got some pieces that you could definitely use moving forward. You've changed the perception of the organization, the way people think about the Knicks. You might be able to attract people now. That's it. That was the biggest step that they had to make. Let's go to Jacob in the Bronx. Jacob.
Hey, Michael.
Hey,
you
Jacob.
You all are right about the Knicks. Julius Randle is not a number one, but I think he could be a number two. I just think they need a point guard. I think they need somebody who could shoot, and I think they need a defender. That's it. But I think they're good. Like the other caller said, they have a good foundation. And one other thing before I go. Mm-hmm. Last week you all said Ross and Rachel was a better couple than Jim and Pam.
Not me.
Oh, no. Cool.
I said it, Jacob.
You said that, right?
Yep.
I just want to say, Ross is very weird. He's not a good character. He was obsessed with Rachel. That's not a good look. He waited like 7 years just to talk to her. Like, who does that? That's not normal.
Well, somebody actually wrote a story, Jacob. Somebody wrote a story, and it was interesting that friends could not actually exist today. Because, you know, there's a lot of creeping going on, and there's a lot of things that are not woke in that show. But it was, you know, that show was done and finished 17 years ago. I'll tell you what, though, guys, I watched the show on HBO Max. Really well done. Mm-hmm. Really well done. And, Peter, I think you should watch it to see the impact that it has across the whole world.
I watched it. Don't you worry about that.
And you didn't like it?
No, I did. I really enjoyed it. It made me. It reminded me of the things I really liked about Friends, for sure.
You know what made me sad, though?
What's that?
See Matthew Perry like that.
Yeah, the Matthew Perry part was very tough. There's no way around it.
Because he was like so sharp during that show. He was like, he was probably my favorite character on the show. And just to see the shape that he's in real life now, you know, they said later that he had some kind of dental work. That's why he found it hard to speak, but he just didn't look very
well.
Good.
And by the way, and for the record, if that's true,
mm-hmm.
that he had dental work,
they should have postponed.
They should have moved the whole show, like it because it's all you can think about in terms of Matthew Perry.
Yes.
You're right; he was the sharpest character on the show, and then every time he talked, it's like he's lost control of his like tongue or jaw. It was that part was rough.
I didn't get a chance to see it, but I read about it. Why was Justin Bieber and Lady Gaga in it?
They just sprinkled those people in. They were insignificant other than just big names. I mean,
no, the Lady Gaga part was a little bit more than that.
But why? But then no Paul Rudd?
No, Paul Rudd was not there.
And then
Gunther was there on
Tom
Zoom.
Selleck was there.
Well,
Tom
Gunther was the there. Only character not of the main ones that was in the most episodes.
Right, but he was there via Zoom.
But
he looked terrible.
So Nancy's a big Paul Rudd fan, so she was investigating it, and they said, "Well, we ran out of time." Well, if you ran out of time for Paul Rudd, who was a significant character in the show, then what are you throwing in Lady Gaga and Justin Bieber for?
Well, that was – it's hard to explain. Those two parts probably would not have gone away even if you had Paul Rudd.
Right. I mean, because, there's no time limit when you're streaming. I think the show came in at an hour and 43. It could have been 2 hours.
Right. They probably just didn't get him. And honestly, Don, the guest people that they brought in was like, whatever. It was – the way that they used Bieber and Lady Gaga in some ways was better because they just – they Lady Gaga performed Smelly Cat with Gwyneth Paltrow. And
Gwyneth Paltrow, stop it.
Sorry, with the other white lady.
Lisa Kudrow.
Lisa Kudrow. And she's being Phoebe in the skit, right? So Lisa Kudrow's being Phoebe. And it was funny. Michael, I liked the Gaga part. I thought it was cute,
yeah,
actually.
I liked it too. I will tell you one thing, and this is a hard thing to say, and I'm not going to say it about anybody specific. Do actors and actresses realize that when they get work done, they look so fake?
I need a name.
No, I mean,
I think I know who you're talking
names.
About. Without the even one, seeing one, it, I know who you're talking
Don,
about.
Don, the one guy that I love the most from this, Matt LeBlanc, has just given up, and he doesn't care if you know it. He put on like 70 pounds, had a big gut, and he could. Peter, was he the happiest guy of the six?
Oh, he was great. And I got to tell you, the weird thing about Matt LeBlanc, though, is that he's had multiple shows recently.
Oh, yeah.
In which he was thin. It's almost, Michael, it almost made me think that right now he's either working on something or he's having like a year where he doesn't have any work and just said, screw it. He was fat.
I watched Man with a Plan, which is on for like 4 seasons. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
On CBS. And he was that size.
Oh, he was?
I don't think he's working on something. I just think he's getting big. But the reason I thought he was fabulous in the show is I watched the show and I didn't see Joey. That's the problem with all. That's why MASH, none of the guys were able to do anything because all anybody ever thought about was their characters in that show.
Right.
I thought he did a terrific job in Man with a Plan. I don't know if either of you saw it, where I didn't feel like that was Joe. He played a different character. He was a dad.
He also had that show on cable where he played like a mean version of Matt LeBlanc, which was supposed to be excellent.
He's had a really good career. No, he has.
Yeah,
he has.
Had a really good career.
And also, I just want to point out while we've now gone deep into the Friends rabbit hole, I just want to say Jennifer Aniston seems so cool. Like, she seems so down to earth, considering sort of the thing that the elephant in the room is, she basically became an A-lister and no one else did.
Right, she became a movie star. No one else did.
Like, she became a true A-list Hollywood movie star. And everyone else has had a nice career. But there's no doubt that Jennifer Aniston's in a different room. And she gives no air that that's the case.
Yeah, she's outstanding.
You love her. Let's be honest, you'd walk right out on your family for Jennifer Aniston.
No, I would. Not now.
He might
maybe
do some
back
things
in
front of his family.
You'd have that scene, I forget what movie it's from, where you call Charlie and Callie, say, I want you both on the line. You go, Daddy's never coming home. And you just hang up the phone.
No, I would never do that. William in Brooklyn. William. William.
Will.
Billy.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, good, good. I was calling. Peter, I love you. I follow you on the podcast, Cheap Heat and everything.
Oh, thanks.
But
here we go.
Your take on Kyrie Irving.
Okay.
In his post-game comments after game two, all he said was to the Boston fans, let's keep it about basketball. Then he's like, oh, with Boston fans, everybody knows how they get when it comes to an African-American player.
Yep.
All he was saying was, just keep it basketball. Let's not go with the racist terms and all that stuff. And he was okay with all the booing and everything. He soaked it in. You saw him going back and forth with the fans. And at the end of the day, if you don't want him celebrating on your court, you got to beat him. It was just a little stomp.
I don't want to. I'm not equating the comments to the stomp exactly. I'm just saying, you give this statement where you talk about an important issue, right? And no one wants to see any of those things happen. To me, you get through the game, you beat the team. In theory, at least after game three, we didn't hear anything about any racial issues. In no way, let me be unequivocal, am I saying that him stomping on the leprechaun should now open the door to either A, racial epithets, or certainly someone throwing anything? I'm just saying, for a guy who had brought up this really serious issue, you won the game, you did a good job, finish the game, go have your press conference and talk about how things played out. Walking up and stomping and intentionally now escalating things to me, it almost makes that the conversation you had a few days ago, was that something you were really passionate about? Or is it all just sort of part of the theatrics? It just seemed out of place. It seemed like wrong place, wrong time, given the conversation you wanted to have. Why are you then doing some petty sports nonsense?
And it's also interesting, he knew exactly what he was doing, because for players, I mean, remember when T.O. stepped on the Cowboy logo? I mean, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. It, like, represent you're stepping on that team's face. He didn't have to do it. Again, it should not have led to the bottle throwing, but he didn't have to do that. He answered with his exemplary play.
See, that's the thing. George Teague's reaction to Owens in that for the Cowboys was telling you that stomping on the logo is not directed at the fans. It's directed at the organization and the players that play for that organization.
Exactly.
So he could say, I was doing it to the fans, but anybody that's ever played professional sports will tell you that is a rip towards the organization.
Well, that's
maybe the fans are part of that organization, but for any Celtic player in the Celtic organization, they probably felt that
too.
Well,
you know, and that's why me, for example, I don't have particular kinship with Celtics fans. I'm not from Boston. I have a lot of mixed feelings about Boston as a city. I agree with every statement every black player has ever made about the racial nonsense of Boston, and I've looked into it, read about it, dug into it deeply, have family in Boston. We talk about it. Like, I am fully on board. I have no great kinship with the Celtics faithful in Boston, but I am a fan of that team, of that organization, which, by the way, is so not like Boston. Okay? Red Auerbach and the organization that he built along with Bill Russell, you're talking about one of the most progressive franchises in all of sports. So it's really important that you don't mix up the racist Boston fan that we all have good reason to picture with that logo, who most of us think about Red Auerbach and Bill Russell and the legacy that was built in Boston. When Kyrie goes up and stomps on the logo and drags his foot like he has feces on it, I don't take that as a diss to the dumb racist fans of Boston. I take that as a diss to Larry Bird, Casey Jones, Bill Russell, John Havlicek. That's what he's doing. Like, if you want to diss the fans, do it in the press conference. When you rub your foot on the logo like it's doo-doo, that is blatant disrespect to the organization that you walked out on. And Kyrie's own father said to Dan Shaughnessy, I believe it was Shaughnessy.
Ian O'Connor.
Oh, it was Ian O'Connor.
Yeah.
Kyrie's father said, Kyrie feels guilty about what happened. He knows he did the wrong thing in leaving Boston. He knows he did them wrong. So don't now pretend that nothing ever happened or it's not disrespect to the franchise to do that. It was intentionally that.
Let's take a brief timeout. We're going to get back to this. We have a lot to talk about with this, but Don has another list today, a Daily Don.
That's right, Donnie.
Yeah, so let's hear what this one's about. We'll have it in just a moment. Stay right where you are on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
everybody. It's me. I'm back. And guess what? It's another Don segment.
We're doing the list, Michael. I don't care if you don't like it.
The Daily Don.
I'll fight to the death for this list.
It's the Daily Don Show. He makes lists.
Take it away, Donnie.
All right, I've been sitting on this one for a while, and I think later on in the show, it'll definitely bear fruit. But top five Michael K. Show fan complaints.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. All right, let me jump in.
You should, since you're going to be number one.
Well, let's keep it to sports, shall we?
Oh. No, it's not.
Oh, I thought you meant like complaints about the show, like I hate Peter, I'm not going to listen to him.
No, I was...
That could be another really cool list.
Well, hold on.
Like fan complaints about their teams and such.
Because Peter was definitely number one.
Michael, you know what I was about to say?
What?
I was going to say Peter talking about the Washington football team.
I was just going to say Peter talking.
Oh, see, now you have to take us being on the same page and ruin it.
The Daily Don, you moron!
The Daily Don.
Think it is?
Is there a general complaint for Brian Cashman?
No, there sure would be, and it's number two. Good pull, Peter.
Thank you.
Cashman, they've been complaining about Brian Cashman before the 2009 championship and certainly after the 2009 championship. The calls for his firing almost come on a daily basis on the show, and Brian Cashman is number two.
Well, then you got to go with Aaron Boone.
No, only because, well, there would have to be a separate category for, manager of Yankees. But, the show's been going on. We'll be celebrating our 19th anniversary on July 15th. And Boone's only been the manager for 18, 19, 20, and 21 here. So need a little bit more for Boone to get into the top five, Michael.
All right, how about Jimmy Dolan?
Oh, Jim Dolan is, of course, number one. Owner of the Knicks, not so much the Rangers. The Ranger fans don't complain nearly as much as the Knicks fans did for a long time. But Jim Dolan can't get a free agent, meddling. Jim Dolan, I think, and rightly so, is number one.
Well, it obviously has to have the Wilpons on the list.
Oh, you're right, Peter. Fred and Jeff Wilpon no longer with us as far as ownership is concerned. Everybody's now focused on the new owner, Steve Cohen, but right now, when you look back in the history of the Mets, they hit pause during 15 and 16, Michael, when they made the playoffs, but before then and after then, the Wilpons, specifically Jeff, but the Wilpons, plural, would be number three.
Now, I'd like to just drop in a tease for the rest of the show, because Steve Cohen has turned into a Twitter troll. You see what he just tweeted out?
It's amazing
how people don't complain when we're winning. Well, why? He just tweeted that a couple of times.
Is he new to the sports business?
What is he doing, though? Why is he antagonizing his fan base?
He can't help himself. But that's, keep winning and I won't care. He's right.
But I'll tell you what. I've said this since the very beginning. His Twitter thing is not going to turn out well. Okay, so we have four guys.
What are you doing, man?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
How about the Woodster, Woody Johnson?
No.
He thought
really?
About it.
I did think about it. Really, in your mind's eye, Susan, how often do you really hear people specifically call to complain?
Well, he's been in England for 4 years. Well, maybe you've forgotten.
Well, that's not my fault.
No, I'm sure it wasn't.
No, Woody Johnson did not make the list. Or Chris, by the way. Or Leon.
But I feel like the Jets have to be represented in there.
I thought about one specific. It didn't make the list.
But Gase?
In generality, I was thinking about whoever the offensive coordinator is, but didn't make the top five. When you hear the other two, who are you taking out?
Okay. Sorry. So we currently have the Knicks' terrible years, the Mets, Brian Cashman.
Right.
Huh.
Are the other two teams or people?
Oh, these are people. These are individuals, Michael. A lot of talk, a lot of discussion, a lot of complaining.
How about Giancarlo Stanton?
Too new. Not top.
Oh, it's got to be A-Rod then.
Oh, good job, Peter.
There you go.
Alex Rodriguez, number four. Oh, sure, it's all wine and roses now, right? He's honored at Yankee Stadium. The Yankee fans love him. He's on Shark Tank. They love him. Oh, before 2009, not so much. He was winning MVPs. Still complained about him. Other players were worse. They still complained about him. Alex Rodriguez, number four.
How about number five being Odell Beckham Jr.?
Not long enough.
Sorry. Oh, but it was good for a while.
It was a very brief while when you think about it.
But Michael, you're forgetting Odell Beckham Jr. before Odell Beckham Jr., except even less reason to complain. Don, it has to be Carmelo Anthony.
Oh, what a great job by Peter today. I thought because he's, you know, fairly new to the show, dominant performance. Carmelo Anthony. Oh, he doesn't get along with this guy. He's a ball hog. He doesn't make players around him better. He's not LeBron James. Carmelo Anthony, number five. So, number five, Carmelo Anthony. Number four, Alex Rodriguez. Number three, the Wilpons. Number two, Brian Cashman. Number one, James Dolan.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you.
Really good list.
I thought about that today because, you know, a lot of Yankee fans were tweeting me, do they have permission now to complain about the Yankees?
Yes, they do. We'll get into that. They have permission. I think you should work on the list top five complaints about the show too.
You know what? I'll tell you what. Let's all work together.
No,
that'll be tomorrow.
It.
No. Meaning like you start thinking.
Okay.
And then the listeners can start thinking, the fans, and then I will compile my top five. And we've never done that before, but we're going to preview tomorrow's top five. Complaints about the show specifically.
It's an easier.
Why are you worried about my arm hair, you weirdo?
It's easy, an easy list for you to do, Don, because you have the number one slot filled out, and then you take it from there.
No,
oh, Peter is the biggest complaint.
Yeah, but no, but we can't work in generalities, right?
Don.
They got to be specific. Like saying Peter would be like just putting number one complaint Yankees. No, we're going to be specific to everyone. So there might be multiple Peter complaints.
Oh yeah, there will be.
There can
be
multiple Michael and Don complaints.
Hardly any complaints about me.
We'll see. Listen for the list tomorrow, 2:45. First time ever in the history of the Daily Don, we are previewing the next day's list.
All right, let's take a brief timeout.
Why?
We'll talk a little bit more about the Nets and what Kyrie did, and where exactly that leaves them. They play tonight. And believe me, they do not want to go to Boston for Game 6. There's no need to let a wounded animal get up and start, like, walking again. And that would be exactly the case if you let the Celtics win tonight. It's Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Everybody get your... You know, we can't go the whole show without mentioning, again, the brilliance yesterday of Jacob DeGrom. He is so special. So he gets a win. Mets scored some runs for him. I think he threw, like, the first 20 pitches. I might be wrong with the number, over 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, crazy.
And then he buries two sliders. It's unbelievable. And a friend of mine just sent me this to tell you how weird things are. Jacob DeGrom has more hits, 9, than Mike Ford, who has 8. And the same amount of RBIs as Brett Gardner, 3.
Yeah.
So this guy is not only pitching at a high level, he's hitting at a high level. I don't even know why, you know, when you look at the Met lineup, which is, you know, just savaged and ravaged by injuries, why would you even pitch to him?
It's crazy, right? And I know a lot of Met fans were upset that he was taken out after 70 pitches, which is crazy. 70 pitches over 6 innings, but... And May gave up a couple of runs the very next, so everybody's flipping out. But this Diamondback team is terrible.
You got to save bullets with this guy.
You got to save him. And listen, I know, and that would have been the talk, right, if the bullpen had blown a 6-0 lead. But at 6-0, when, you know, you've got to be able to preserve him because he's going to give you your best chance if this team is going to be in a pennant race, which as we get deeper and deeper into this thing, you know, when are the Braves going to turn it around? When are the Phillies going to turn it around? You know, maybe they'll ride. Maybe the Mets will run away with things. But, you know, a 0.71 earned run average. And just shows you the joke. How do you have an earned run average way less than one and actually have two losses? It's crazy. But let's give Rojas some credit, really. I mean, we're the first to jump the manager whenever things are not going well. And the one thing that a manager can do is keep a team's spirits up when things are kind of down. And with all the injuries that they've had, and I understand that there's a lot of bad teams in baseball, and certainly the Mets have faced a lot of them over the last couple of weeks. But for this team to continue to win games despite everybody being injured, you got to give some credit to Rojas, right?
I think so. I think he's held them together. I think that was the strength of Aaron Boone when they won 103 games. He never let them get down, and they continued to play hard. I mean, the Mets are running non-representative lineups out there, and they keep winning.
Yeah, but Alonso's back, Braves and he had losing, a big night last night.
The Braves losing Ozuna, they're probably losing for the rest of the year, might lose him for all time after what he did, because in this one, the responding officers actually watched him throw his wife down.
That's right.
So he's got no defense whatsoever, so he's not coming back this year. Major League Baseball probably going to hand him a very long suspension. That's a big loss on the baseball field for the Atlanta Braves, which is a small thing when compared to what he did to his wife. So the Braves are in trouble. The Phillies just seem to be middling along. Washington seems to be middling along. I don't know if the Marlins have enough this year. That division is for the Mets to take. And another thing, and we said we were going to talk about it, why is Steve Cohen trying to rile up his fans? What's he doing, Don? He tweeted out today, amazing how there's not that much complaints here when they win. Well, yeah, that's the way it works, Steve. Fans complain when the team's losing, and they don't complain when they win.
This is going to sound like a really strong criticism, but let me explain. He doesn't get it. And what I mean by that is he doesn't get, I guess, what really being a fan is. And I know he grew up a Met fan, and he obviously was around the team owning a percentage of the team when the Wilpons had the majority. But that's what fans do, especially Met fans. They complain. They complain when things aren't going right, and then all of a sudden when they start winning, it's all okay. That's how a lot of sports fans are. But especially Met fans, when they're putting up billboards for the Wilpons to sell the team, the billboards went away when they went to the World Series in 2015, right? All of a sudden, Knick fans aren't complaining about Dolan when the team goes to the playoffs, right? That's just the way it works. That's how fans are. They're irrational. They're reactionary. And Steve Cohen almost seems like he's from Mars when it comes to actually knowing sports. And then to antagonize them by tweeting it out. Listen, I love the fact that he owns the team, but it doesn't sound like he kind of gets sports fans unless he just enjoys riling them up, but I don't know why that's a good thing.
I'm telling you, as I've said earlier in the show and I've said before, this is not going to go well. Listen, it's not a big deal. That's just one individual tweet, but when you sort of see how he's handled these things at different points, it's nice that he wants to engage, but engaging in this way comes off as so stupid. I'm noticing a lot less complaining when the team is doing well. What's exactly the point of that? I mean, it's literally the most obvious statement in history about any situation, right?
Well, because the owner, and I know this sounds ridiculous because it's just so far from the reality of the world, but they're your customers. Imagine being an owner of a deli. And saying that to your customers.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, my sandwich. You complained about the sandwich when it gave you botulism yesterday, but now all of a sudden you're not complaining when I make a good sandwich. You would never hear that, right?
An airline. Oh, I notice no one's complaining when it doesn't feel like the flight's going to crash.
Yeah, all of a sudden we had no turbulence. So that's how an owner should look at it, right? Not a manager, not a general manager, not the players, but the owner. Literally, you're talking to your customers.
He really does seem as if he's trolling, Don.
Well,
like he's trying to get a rise out of his fan base. And I think the Met fan base is really great. I mean, they've hung through some really tough times with this team. And, you know, they had the right to complain. And the way things were going this year, they had a right to get a little antsy. But now that things are going well, I mean, you can't hang on the rim the way things are going. This is not the way it was planned by the decision makers.
If I could play pop psychologist for a second. And again, I don't know him. I don't watch Billions. But from what you guys described, he's not like this in his business world. As a matter of fact, he's very introverted and not really out there, doesn't do a lot of interviews, doesn't talk, because that's about his money. That's his business. This is the toy store. And in the toy store, I guess this is where he gets a chance to kind of go out there and get a little exposure, because it's something, not that he doesn't take it seriously, but probably doesn't take it as seriously as his everyday business, because whatever money he makes from the Mets is pocket change compared to what he's making in his business world. So this is his chance to kind of be out there. And he thinks he's engaging the fans, but if he related to him a little bit more, he'd understand that it's coming across more as of trolling than being one of them.
Did you guys see that Krispy Kreme had the greatest year of its existence during the pandemic?
They make a nice product.
Well, I mean, you also realize why people put on weight during the pandemic. They were eating donuts, obviously.
Well, a lot of people like to eat through their troubles and their worries.
Like Matt LeBlanc.
And well, I mean, he's not morbidly obese. He's got a belly.
I loved him. No. David Schwimmer's older than him, and he looked just like he did when he was Ross.
Well, good for him.
And I'm not criticizing LeBlanc. He seems like he's enjoyed his life, but he put on 70 pounds since Joey.
All right, and there's a lot of people that have put on 70 pounds since Joey. The show's been off the air for 17 years.
I get it. I've lost weight in those 17 years.
No, and I have as well, and so has Peter.
I'm just saying.
But
why
you know
are you
what?
Jumping
I bet
me?
He's having a lot more fun than we are.
He probably is. He looks like he's the happiest one of the six.
And yet here you are coming after him.
I'm not coming after him.
You're pulling a Steve Cohen. You're not getting it. You're going right after him.
I am not going after him. I'm making a point.
Well, you're making a point of going after him. Peter, am I wrong about this? You're talking about the guy's gut. Most people have guts.
No, it's
called a middle-aged spread.
Peter, significant or not?
He looked like he was like the old Matt LeBlanc was about to explode out of him.
But don't you think? Let me ask.
Thank
you
for once
defending me. What percentage of what is he? 55, 56 years old.
He looked like he ate Ross and Chandler.
All right, but see, that's not right. I've seen it. That's not true.
Okay. Don, you haven't seen it. Even his arms look beefy.
But the finale of the last show he was on was like a year ago.
Oh, a lot of people put on weight during the pandemic.
What percentage of mid-50s people, men specifically, look like they ate themselves from 20 years ago? What, 60%?
No.
70%?
No, no way. High. People are much healthier now.
Oh, stop.
Maybe
it.
20%, 25%.
Krispy Kreme is now breaking records.
Well, Don, hold on. You're a terrible example. You're thinner than you from 20 years
ago.
Right. Those were huge, fat people.
And I'm making a concerted effort because I've got twins that I want to at least see the eighth grade. Right?
And now look at this. Obese
yes,
man
puts a picture up. Heavier Don, it says.
I got to see this.
You've got a nice, what do they call that kind of design? Oh, Peter will see it next week.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. I'm looking forward to it.
I do well.
Yeah, I still haven't seen it yet. The delay is significant. Oh, there it is. Yeah, look at
Argyle.
That.
Argyle sweater. Argyle, thank you.
That's right, but I look better now, right?
I thought you looked great when you were beefy, too.
Well,
he looked terrible.
But doesn't that look, don't I look like somebody that ate like 20-year-old Don? That's the way those pictures look. That was at the Lord and Taylor shows that we used to do back in the day when we were out.
Oh, that's meatballs. That's much better than the bad Don, though.
What kind of steak was it? Because you seem like a bone-in guy.
Let's take a brief time out because we've got to show you show and listen to the response by the Knicks of Clint Capella's antagonistic comments. Very interesting stuff. Kayla Greco, Rosenberg and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
The great Frank Isola, the Nets. This team is so good. And Draymond Green came out today and said nobody is beating them in the East. And I'm going to take it a step further. I don't see any team presently constituted in the West that could beat them either.
I think the team that will be the toughest series for them will be Milwaukee. I don't see anybody else in the East. And then even the Western Conference, first of all, LeBron and the Lakers might not even get there. And I get the Clippers are tough, but Utah's a very good team. But the Nets are just a lethal offensively. Even the game that they lost, they started the game on a 19-4 run. A loss for them will be Jeff Green. Now, Jeff Green was a really important player to the team. Besides the fact that he gives you experience, he can knock down a shot, he can defend, he rebounds. You're looking at their bench like, you know what, it's not really that good without Jeff Green in there.
The Michael K. Show.
They actually gave me the journalism award. Peter, thanks for showing up.
On 98.7 ESPN.
You know, I missed that in real time. What a nice shot at Peter. Frank does that great.
Well, because he's so deadpan.
Right.
Yeah, he you don't really see the shot coming. Very stealth.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a Scud missile right over the hill. You don't even know it's coming.
I'm a big fan.
And Peter ends up being Arthur Kent. I love it. Mm. Just dated myself there. Bad news for the
say it.
For the Sixers.
Oh no.
Woj reporting Joel Embiid will be doubtful for game 5.
You ruin everything.
And an MRI on his right knee today is expected to be evaluated further in the next day.
It's not fair.
What do you make of this young Andrew Gundling?
Well, that is not quite the level of bad that I was thinking when you first said bad news for the Sixers. To me, bad news for the Sixers was MRI comes back and our worst fears are confirmed.
Well, I just think that they're pushing the rock down the road.
Well, okay, you're right. I don't feel any more comfortable now than I did an hour ago about his situation, but it's not worst fears confirmed.
Yeah. I mean, doubtful for game 5, it's a series they could win without him. So if you're doubtful for game 5, then you would think he could be available for the second round matchup against the Hawks.
Unless it's a serious knee injury.
But you would have found that out after the MRI.
Oh, they might not have told you. You know, they're not really forthright, all teams, about injuries. All right, so GManFam181.
Yes.
He tweets this out, and he's right. Joey looks like a real person. Most of them look like they had so much work done that they didn't even look like themselves. And he's right. I said this earlier because I'm not going to name names, but some of them had work done that. Why would you do that? I mean, aging is part of, like, life. Why would you have the work done? I don't understand, because everybody knows that you had the work done. I think two people look like themselves, Lisa Kudrow and Matt LeBlanc. They look like themselves. Everybody else, and you know how I'm a huge Aniston fan, but everybody else seemed like they looked a little different than they did in real life. A little bit. That's all I want to say.
No, listen, you have every right to say what you said. I mean, listen, Jennifer Aniston, you can tell she's got the high price stuff going on, because she still looks great, but you don't notice.
She looks tremendous. She just looks a little different.
And she was also the youngest of them, right? I believe she was the youngest.
I think she was. Yeah, and that's the order. And then Kudrow's the oldest. Jennifer Aniston is 52.
Yeah, everybody else is older than that.
Courtney Cox, of course, famous from the Dancing in the Dark videos, so you already know. She's 56. And Lisa Kudrow is 71 years old. So Kudrow's 57. Kudrow's 57. She's 57. But Ross looked great. Schwimmer looks great.
His eyes looked a little different. But anyway,
people age. It's been 20 years.
Well, he looked like Ross. He did. I agree. Schwimmer should be what we do. You know what Schwimmer did with all six of them, right? He got them together and said, we negotiate as one. We all get paid the same. Nobody comes back before everybody's signed to the same thing. I think that's what we should do with the three of us, our next deal.
Well, that's...
But wasn't Aniston the one who was going to get the big money? And then she agreed to it?
I don't know. I'm not sure she would have gotten.
Because I think Aniston was the one who was set to get seven figures. Or maybe Aniston and Schwimmer?
Well, Schwimmer and Aniston became, you know, the central part of the show.
Right.
What was also interesting is that the producer said that they did not want to get together Monica and Chandler. That was just a one-day thing, and the audience reaction made them reestablish it and change the whole arc of the show.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, listen, I find it all to be a very – I call this conversation interesting thoughts about a show that's not as good as The Office.
All right, so a Clint Capella, the Knicks are playing tomorrow. And by the way, the Knicks are not only playing tomorrow – but in this spot tomorrow, so in the 5 o'clock hour tomorrow, I want you people to write this down because it's important. We're giving away two tickets to get into the Garden tomorrow. You have to be vaccinated, but we're giving away two tickets in this spot tomorrow. Oh, this hour, not tomorrow. What am I saying? This hour.
Yeah,
so
that'd be
later
tough
in this
day
hour.
Of the game.
Well, that's been done before. So later in this hour, we're giving away Game 5 Nick tickets. How about that?
They're going to need you.
That's what I'm saying. This is, if you're someone, this is your moment to come together, to rally.
And I think the Nick fan will do this, but I'm just going to say it anyway. Let's say they get blown out by 30. All right? Final moments. No one leave. Give the team a standing ovation. Thank them for the season. It may not have ended the way you wanted it to end, but they definitely deserve applause as they leave the court. As tough as that might be to do if they're getting blown out, as disappointed as you are, let's see if the Nick fan actually puts their money where their mouth is and appreciate the season as a whole. And I think they would deserve that kind of reception with a loss.
Not going to happen, though, Don. They're going to win this one.
Now,
okay.
I just got word, because we're an exciting place and we're an exciting show to listen to. So we're giving away tickets later on in this hour. Ready?
Yes.
Wait for it. We're giving away tickets to Game 5 of the Knicks and the Hawks in the 3 o'clock hour tomorrow.
Got to make it early. Got to give them time to get there.
Yeah. Although, you know, Don, I don't know if you realize this. People do email tickets now. They can make it at 6:30 and still people will be able to get there.
Well, it depends on where you live.
True. Good point. All right, so Clint Capella, never heard the cliche, let sleeping dogs lie. This is what the Hawks center said.
Push our guys around and talk shit. But we can do that too. And we show them as soon as they came back here that we can push guys around too. We can talk shit as well. So what you going to do about it? And we can get a win with it. So what you going to do about it? Oh, game 4, you're coming back again. Well, it's going to happen again. We win the game. We talk shit and we push around. So what are you going to do about it? So that's what happened. We can do it too. We can be physical, but we can win games as well. And now we're coming to your home to win this game again. They send you on vacation.
All right, so nobody has an answer for this, but why would he say that? You've had the upper hand over the Knicks in this series. Even the game they won. Now, you could say, well, the Knicks could have won game one. Well, my aunt could have been my uncle if she had hair on her back. But, I mean, it's just a big if. So, you've won 3 of the first 4 games. You're about to clinch and move on and face probably the Sixers. And you got to say something like that. What purpose does that serve? Anyway, go ahead, Don. I'm sorry.
Have they been talking that much smack? Is there something that I don't know about this series that has irritated him to the point he felt like he needed to say that? I know it's been a little chippy at times, but the only way that that would be justified is if the Knicks have just been completely obnoxious during the series. And
Maybe this is toward the fans. I don't know. Andrew wonders if it was calculated to take some of the venom off of Trae Young and get it directed toward him. So here, Julius Randle was asked about Clint Capella's comments.
I don't know if you heard about Clint Capella's comments. He said,
"Don't care.
They're coming to put you on vacation."
Don't care.
And I assume that you did hear about them, though, Julius. I know
just
you don't
heard
care.
About it, just heard about it. And I do not care. We're not focused on that. We focus on what we got to do as a team. So when I ask what we got to do, that's great. But you know, why would I give a hell what Clint Capella has to say?
I think they were also the Hawks were angry about the elbow that Randle gave to Gallinari. Now, Derrick Rose was asked about Capella's comments.
I'm 32 years old, bro. I never talked like that in my life, and I'm not going to start now once Clint Capella's like start talking crazy. It don't get to me like that. So, no disrespect to you, though, bro.
So, let's put it this way. I don't think the Knicks have played great basketball. Now, do I think after watching them for 4 games that they're better than the Hawks? No, I don't. I think the Hawks have more talent, a lot more talent, actually. But I don't think the Knicks have played their A game. So if they go out and play their A game, and let's say the Hawks play their B-plus game, the Knicks could win the game. And then you take it back to Atlanta, you take your shot. Now, we gave you the numbers. They're not very good. Teams that have come back from 3-1, not many. I think 13 out of 160, something like that. So maybe 260 just hasn't happened. The Knicks have been down 3-1 13 times in their organization's history. They're 0 for 13 in coming back. I think they forced a game 7 a couple of times. So I'd like them to force a game 7. I'd like to get that game 7 at the Garden, see what happens. But they have to play their A game. They haven't played their A game yet. Even the game they won wasn't their A game. And that A game happens to be Julius Randle scoring 30 points. That's their A game. So we'll see if they could do it. We'll see if they can do it.
I don't know why, when you're up 3 games to 1, why you would give any kind of bulletin board fodder
It's ridiculous.
Anything that can turn it around. First of all, it's a tough game to get anywhere. You split at the Garden, right? So the Knicks could very easily win Game 5 no matter what. So now you'd be, oh, maybe they think, oh, we'll go back to Game 6. We never lose at home. But why would you want to extend the series, especially if you the winner taking on a Sixers team that might be compromised? Don't you want to just finish the Knicks off and rest and get ready?
Yeah, it's a dumb prepare. Move.
I mean, it's just stupid. The satisfaction of the 30 seconds of saying it, I don't understand why long-term that's a good idea.
This portion of the Mike Lucas Show on 98.7 ESPN brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Try Truly Hard Seltzer, 100 calories, 1 gram sugar, 5% alcohol, and 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, please drink responsibly. And the Nets are playing their Game 5 tonight at Barclays Center. And it really behooves the Nets, and Don laid this out before as well. You win tonight. Get it over with. The last thing you want to do is go back to Boston, full house. You never know what's going to happen. They'll be in a frenzy. Get it over tonight. This way, you have almost the same amount of rest as Milwaukee. Milwaukee swept Miami. So if it took five games for the Nets to beat the Heat or to beat the Celtics, that's fine. But now if you push it to Game 6, then Milwaukee has a real decided advantage coming into that first game. So get it over with tonight, and I think they can.
I mean,
the Celtics are banged up.
Unless Tatum might have to go for 60 this time.
He might.
Short of that, yeah, there's no reason. And I say this, you know, I respect the Celtics' effort on Friday. They really fought back from a tough first 3 minutes when I called the game as being over. But
well,
there's no reason.
It wasn't like – I don't want to abuse you that much for it, but it was a freezing cold take.
No, it was a freezing cold take, but they were getting absolutely blitzed, and I was just, hey, listen, a lot changes, right? The Knicks were completely in that game. I was all excited to watch what the Knicks did in the second half, and then in the second half, the Knicks were completely not even interesting, and the Celtics were having a battle, and Jason Tatum was iconic. But it's just hard to believe that, you know, short of something crazy happening, it would be very tough for the Celtics to get another one, especially in Brooklyn.
It is amazing to me what Twitter allows people to do. They really allow themselves to look foolish because they feel they've got to get their takeout so they could be right away. So Peter said 3 minutes in, it's over, and now that hangs over his head like an anvil, and he kind of looks like a doofus when they came back and win. So, I mean, I don't understand why people on Twitter really feel like everybody, they have to say their innermost thought every single time it comes to their head. I never do it. I never watch a game and go, this is it, this is over, all this run is over. I don't want to be the one that's wrong.
I understand, but you're kind of taking the whole fun out of Twitter.
I guess.
Because if Peter had tweeted out, let's say they got blown out by 30. Oh, I knew this was going to happen. Well, who cares? It's over. But he gave his feeling at that particular moment. And then if it turned out to be right, well, then he looks great. But you got
to
dare to dream.
And it was a win-win because it turns out to be wrong and my team won.
That's right.
Beautiful. I got no problem with that. Listen,
I was just going by the fact you text us that. You tweeted it too?
Oh, I tweeted it.
Okay.
Now, come on, Don. Why? Why would he do that? So he could hang on the rim? Now the rim broke and there's all glass over his head.
Listen, but guess what? I was rolling around in the glass with Jason Tatum having 50. And by the way, Michael, did you get to watch the end of that game or no?
No.
I'm guessing, Don, you were watching hockey?
Yes.
I wish you guys got to. Andrew, in a word. Can you describe what Tatum is like when he's in the zone?
Unstoppable.
It's insane. He hits from everywhere.
Well, that was the game on Channel 7, so I did catch the last, like, 10 minutes of it.
Oh, yeah, you saw some of it. In the last 10 minutes, he went from, like, 40 to 50. He's just absolutely ridiculous. But, I'm curious to see what they do around him. But
as crazy as that was, Peter, the Nets still had some looks late.
Oh, yeah.
Where they could have still found a way to win that game.
I mean, well, don't forget. I mean, it was that game, right, where was it Harden and KD? Yeah, Harden and KD combined for 80. And that was a night where Kyrie was off.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Mike in Weston, Connecticut. What's up, Michael?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How you doing?
Everyone's counting the Knicks out. I know they've been outnumbered this whole series, but, you know, they play in the Garden tomorrow. If they come out with the win, you know, everyone's going to be talking about, hey, if we just win Game 6, we're going to be back in the Garden for Game 7. So,
correct.
You know, Randall's got to show up. And if, you know, if he can show up, I say the Knicks still have a good shot to
come
to
on, good.
Mike,
I'm going to give Mike.
They
I'm
have a
give
good shot,
I'm
Mike.
Gonna, I'm not going to jump him because I got to tell you.
Well, I mean, hey,
but statistically, Mike, statistically, teams that fall behind, I think 5% of the teams that fell behind 3-1 win the series. So you can't say they have a good shot. They have a terrible shot.
No,
it's a terrible shot. 5-95 is an awful shot. Do they have a shot? Yes, but please don't say it's a good shot because it's ill-informed.
Well, listen, I don't think anybody would be shocked if they won Game 5. They're home, right?
Right.
You know,
but they don't have
like,
a shot to win the series.
So but he's like, oh, then we go to Game 6. Well, then you go to Game 6 to a place where, like, the Hawks never lose.
Here's the thing. If I'm on the team, what was the name of that caller?
Mike and Weston.
Mike and Weston. He's the guy you want talking in the locker room. You know, hey, let's win one tomorrow night at home. Then all we got to do is steal one in Atlanta, and we have a Game 7 in our building. Of course, Don, come on. We've seen this. That's the logic. And in hockey, you see it much more often, or at least it feels much more often. That is the logic. Of course, that's the logic.
But
unfortunately, it rarely happens.
But in your description of what has to happen, if you use the word steal, then you don't have a good chance.
Right. Stealing's not a good chance.
A good chance, no way. Now, I will say this about Mike, and I don't want to jump Mike. But up early this morning. I listened to all the shows. I was out and about listening to the shows. I got to tell you, of all the fan bases in New York, all nine of them professionally, you know, if you want to include the Liberty and MLS and all that, 12, no one is more optimistic than a Knicks fan. Right? I mean, they're down 3-1, and you've got people calling saying, I think we can have a shot. No other fan base is like that. None.
The only thing I took exception to, good shot. No, you don't have a good shot.
No. You've got a good shot at Game 5.
We all have a good shot one day of dying. We have a good shot of that.
No, that's more than a good shot. It's a guarantee.
It's a guarantee, but I'm looking to avoid it.
I know.
He'll find every way. If there's a way, Michael will find it. Just a matter of whether he can buy enough time. But
I think you, Michael.
I love the optimism of Knicks fans. Obviously, Yankee fans aren't optimistic. Met fans certainly aren't.
You know how they say, that Father Time is undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
Michael's going to be Buster Douglas. All right, he's going to be the one. 37-0
Buster
until he
Douglas,
meets
the USA 1980 hockey team.
That's Michael.
The Super Bowl III Jets.
Well, let's just put it this way. If it can be done, I'm going to do it. Now, I don't think it can be done, but I'm going to try.
No, you'll find a way. Again, you're going to run out of time. You're going to run out of road. That's all.
I will find a way.
But it won't be for a lack of trying.
Oh, yeah, I'll try. I mean, you'll be very proud of the I don't have any give up when it comes to that. Golf maybe, but not that.
Yeah, no more lesson Thursday.
No.
So next step is actually being invited and going and playing.
No, I'm not. I couldn't do it. There's no way I could do that.
So it's over.
Well, unless I decide to re-up for some more lessons. But I couldn't play right now. I'd probably shoot a 190.
But you were given the opportunity to re-up, and you said no.
But I can re-up. I could do a private lesson. Maybe I don't want to be with a lot of people.
Bev went, whoa.
Don't give up on me just yet, Don, all right? Bev, she's great. All right, we'll give away Nick tickets later on in the hour. Kayla Greco-Rosenberg and you right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.